which I wasn't aware of at the time. In the past, I was very self-destructive any time that my mother and I would get into anything, and I quit that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up living with the first woman I went with in Buffalo for quite a while, and we just survived. You know, I worked at a job here and there just short times.
Did you meet her at the bar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So, yeah. At Dugan's or Pat's or which one?
Pat's.
At Pat's. Huh? And Pat's was a gay and straight bar.
Yeah. At that time, the Carousel was the only real gay bar.
Mm-hmm. Where was Pat's?
I can't remember the name of the streets. It was a block away from Dugan's. Whatever street Bingo's used to be on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was up in the next corner.
Why do you think at that time there were so many bars that were both straight and gay while nowadays there aren't?
Well, I would think probably because non-gay people were afraid to run them themselves, too. You know, I think in their own way, they had their stereotypes, so to speak, and they weren't as free to open them and find. Or maybe because of their dislike of gay people.
I see. So this made it safer, so to speak, to have a gay and straight bar, and you didn't...
Yeah, probably.
Huh.
You know, back to people's feelings about gay people, probably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because in those days, as far as I know, for many non-gay people to accept gay people was unusual, because, you know, we had the, which is so much still today, too, the stereotype of that we want to take everybody to bed that we see. You know, I don't know if you've heard the stories about... if a non-gay couple came in, if the woman went to the bathroom, wouldn't go to the bathroom alone because she was afraid what would happen, and the boyfriend would stand there and hover over them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That would happen in Dugan's or Pat's?
Yeah. And... You know, I think about it now, it's even now, how people identify the gay man and the lesbian sexually. You know, everything is sexually, and they don't look at us as a whole person, that everything is just related to sexual, and you think about that, that's back to the same thing.
Uh-huh. In 1953, what were the other bars? It was Dugan's, Pat's, Carousel.
Dugan's, Pat's, Carousel. Bingo's was not fully gay. Some of the people went down. It was a small bar.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
I can't remember if it was 53, 54. It became an all-women's bar. Probably the first one I ever went to.
Huh.
You'd see a man in there once in a while. There were some men's bars on Genesee Street. One was called Johnny's 68. That had been going for years. There was a 5 o'clock club over on Delaware Avenue, which was a men's bar. But back in those days, I traveled mostly with gay men.
Huh.
My closest friends were gay men. And I used to go into some of the men's bars. There's one that opened, I can't remember the name of it, on Chippewa. It was all gay men, and they didn't let gay women in, but I was allowed to go in. And I think it goes back to, which was very true in those days, that gay women were fighters. Wherever there were a group of lesbians, you'd be sure that there was always going to be fights.
Huh.
It seemed to be quite a thing. A lot of barroom brawls.
What? Oh, I have so many questions to ask you. Let me go back 1 minute. Where did you meet these gay men?
In the bars.
In
like the
Carousel.
Yeah, particularly Carousel. That was a mixed bar.
Uh-huh. Would Dugan's have gay men and women, or mainly gay women?
Probably more gay women. I don't know if you've heard the story of back in those days, a lot of gay women were hustlers. And by hustling is that they went out to, you know, get their drink spot and roll these different guys and so forth and so on.
Huh.
So we used to always say if you got an entrance fee, you could go out. Because all you had to do is sit and listen to some non-gay man's BS and he'd buy you drinks all night.
I see. I get it. And that would be the same for Pat's, too.
Yeah, Pat's was like that.
And then at these places, you'd also meet some gay men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And that's what... I want to go back...
And over the period of years, different bars closed and opened. Uh-huh. There was a period there where they didn't, to help you. It seemed like Buffalo was a real swinging city. Gay people from Toronto would come to Buffalo and from Rochester.
Is that right?
And I can remember when the change was made. It was when Rockefeller got into office as governor that he started having state Senate investigations. And they sent vice squad into these various bars. And the Carousel, which had been open for over 20 years, was one of the bars that got closed. And was up in Genesee, and I think it was Ellicott. The Carousel was here, and you went down the other corner, and there was Leonard's, and then you went over here, and there was a 132 club. And you go over a little bit in Genesee, and it was Johnny 68, and it was another bar where mostly men went. And it seemed like that if I may be wrong, but if I remember correctly, that most of the bars had moved up that way, the gay people had started going to the bars up in that direction. Because
what direction was that? More around Delaware?
No, going toward Genesee Street from down around North Division.
Oh, I see. From north of up, it really is up.
You could really bar hop, you know. We walk from one bar to the other and just have a good old time.
What? It's so hard to imagine. What did that neighborhood look like then? Because now it's mainly warehouses and empty lots and stuff. Were there apartments or houses and bars?
The Carousel used to be next to, before they moved. Mm-hmm. They were on Chippewa. They used to be next to an A&P store and across the street from the Chippewa Market, which is no longer. And then she moved up onto Ellicott Street, which would have been across from the Chippewa Market. No, it was still there. And it was also a hotel. I forget what reason. There was something about the lease was up and the building owned the A&P or something. But that's when it moved over there. And still within the same area.
Just going back a minute so I don't forget to ask this. When you were in the service, were your friends gay men and women or mainly gay women?
When I first went in?
When you were in Germany, let's say, was it your circle of friends gay women?
Women. Mm-hmm.
And is that because the service is so segregated?
Well, probably because you lived with women.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I knew any gay men when I was in the service.
So
I don't remember.
It wasn't until you came back to Buffalo and went to a gay bar that you met gay men, and they became your friends right away. What about them did you like that made them your friends?
I don't know. It just proved to me that I didn't hate men. I was comfortable with them, and it probably down deep is they weren't any threat to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what it was basically was all about.
Hmm.
And I had some crazy friends. You know, I used to party and drink a lot, and the people I hung around with did too.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was known for going around. This was later. It was the second time I got out of the service. Middle 50s. I used to always go around and say, let's have a smart party. You know, it was always party time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That person who came out and asked you whether you were looking for whatever kind of bar, was that a woman or a man?
It's a woman.
It was a woman. Was she more butch or more femme?
Well, I guess you would say probably more femme.
More femme.
Which was really ironic. I didn't see her for a long time, and when I went to California, I ran into her in a bar there.
That's funny. Huh. And let's say take a bar like Dugan's. What did it look like? Did it have a gay bouncer?
No, they didn't have any bouncers in these bars. In
they
days.
Didn't, huh?
In those days, you were a survivor. You were a survivor. You had to know how to handle yourself and so forth. And there was a lot of Italian people. I guess you would say it was a bar that street people went to.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically what Pat's was, too. Except for that these bars were notorious, and you'd get the straight man who was coming in looking to go to bed with a gay woman. And there were many a fight.
Hmm. And did the fights start over straight men trying to go to bed with...
Sometimes. It depended upon the mood of the evening.
Uh-huh.
I can remember one time in Pat's. They changed the name of that one time, and I can't remember what it was. They remodeled it and changed it, but this was before. It was a guy I was standing at the bar, and he kept patting me on the butt. And I can't remember my words, but I probably said something pretty foul and loud enough so other people would hear it. And a fight started, and I stood back by the jukebox and watched it. Instigated and stood back and watched. People drop it, fight it to the drop of a hat.
So you instigated it, and then who did he fight with?
The whole bar ended up in a fight. No.
So that's what you mean when you say lesbians were looking for a fight, huh? That they had a reputation, they fight over. What are the kinds of things they fight over?
I don't know. There's one person who's still in the city, and I don't know what I can use her name, and I'll give a pseudonym.
Okay,
call her
good.
Jerry.
Uh-huh.
The first fight that I ever had was with this woman. It was over my ex-lover, my first lover that I really got involved with in Buffalo. I didn't know that this Jerry was going with this other woman. But this Jerry, even to this day, I guess, has still more than one woman on the string. And it was a case of she didn't want me to be involved with this woman and so forth. And she started a fight with me. It was in PAX. It was very early in this game. And I wore glasses then, too, and she took my glasses and broke them. And I didn't know how to fight at all. And I thought, you know, you fight clean. I had these values. I ended up with two black eyes and broken glasses and a few bruises. And I remember going up to the Carousel, and somebody told me to turn around. And our fight ended up in the ladies' room, in the women's room, and I ended up with the toilet paper roll hanging on my blue jeans and wasn't even aware of it. You know, that was some humor. And I remember I thought to myself, somebody told me, you know why she broke your glasses is when her glasses come off, she can't see. I said, well, I can. So I would say probably within a month later, Jerry was out with this woman that I was seeing, and I knew that they were going home. They left the bar, and so I waited for them in my car. And there was a very narrow alley going into this other woman's house. And it was in the wintertime, I remember that. And I walked up very quietly behind her, tapped her on the shoulder, took her glasses off, stomped them into the ground and broke them, and started swinging. And I remember we ended up in the house, and I was holding a washcloth to her bloody nose. And to this day, her and I are very, very good friends. But for a long period of time, whenever she was in a bar and I was in a bar, people were always very worried
that you would get into
that we were going to get into it. And I was never one really who looked for it. I'd do everything mm-hmm. to avoid it, because I came from a screaming mother who was, you know, I guess you would say violent in a way, and it always disturbed me. But you had that image that you had to carry on, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was always standing looking over my shoulder waiting to see if she was going to be hitting me.
Uh-huh. Would you say the image you had to carry on, that's what it meant, that it was a street bar and that people who went in there were tough?
Yeah, right. That was the image. You had to be tough.
And would that be true for butches as well as, for femmes as well as butches?
No, I guess you'd say the femmes sat back and the butches did the dirty work, more or less.
They would get into the fights.
Yeah.
Did femmes ever fight?
I can't really recall.
Huh.
There's another woman who's still in Buffalo. Before her name was Butch, I'll say Dorothy instead of her name, because I don't know what she wanted to believe. And I was talking to her since I came back this time, and she has a permanent. And she said, "You didn't recognize me." I said, "Oh, sure I did." I said, "Because I can remember when you first came around the bars and you had hair down your back, and then when you got it cut, which was, you know, the old mannish haircut, I used to say, you know, I knew you when, and you used to get really angry at me."
Huh.
Used to really get angry. Now, I could talk to her about it today, and she could see the humor in it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I remember she was in fights all the time, and I remember that I used to be a mediator. I was one of the very few people that could talk her into calming down. I could get between her and whoever she was fighting with.
Would butches be fighting with one another over women?
In some instances.
And what else would they fight about?
Anything, I guess.
Hurt feelings, pride.
Right.
And then butches would be fighting with men?
Some. I never wanted to get into it with men. Some.
Mm-hmm.
We sure did. It's Jerry that I'm telling you about. At that time, it was before I colored my hair blonde, which has been so long I can't remember when it was brown. But I wore dark rimmed glasses, and she had brown hair, and I had dark rimmed glasses. And of course, the short haircuts were in style. I used to go to some of the downtown bars, and I'd be accused of being her all the time. And she was always hassling with some guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, "Look, I don't even know you. I never saw you. Oh, yes, you were at such and such a place the other night." But it wasn't me. It was not say her name. I had to really do some talking. Because
huh.
We were basically the same stature.
Now this, and in Dugan's, you met a woman. Was it Dugan's or Pat's?
Pat's.
Pat's, and you got into a relationship with her. And that was really your first long-term relationship.
Yeah.
How long did it last?
Well, when I went back in the service, one of the reasons I went back in was I used it for an escape.
Mm-hmm.
And after I'd signed up to go back in, she begged me not to. And was back, too, because she was going back and forth with this other woman, and I just got kind of tired of it. And then when I was in, one time she came to visit me, spent a week with me at the base that I was in Virginia. And then it kind of just dissolved as time went on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And these street bars, like, were there other bars where gay people went in addition to street bars other than the carousel?
Yeah, they were all, as I called them in those days, and still would call them today, toilets. You know, the bars where street people went. And the main reason to go to them was to hustle guys in the bars.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even though there was all this fighting, there was still a solidarity there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of like, I can say what I want about you, but don't let anybody else do it. People really band together.
Can
closeness.
You talk more about that solidarity? Because I think that's important.
Well, you know, what I really think it was our own form of an extended family during that time, but not aware of what that was. And I think an extended family in the terms of people that we felt comfortable with, that we could be ourselves. You know, there was no phoniness there. You were yourself, and that was it.
Hmm. And would you see the women in other than at the bars?
Yeah, yeah. They became your friends. You know, you travel with them, and like I say, part of your family, you did things together and so forth. But the biggest part of our life was bars.
It was. Yeah. Why do you think that was?
Because there wasn't any other alternatives.
Hmm.
I remember on one occasion, a group of us used to get together on Friday night and play poker
mm-hmm.
at different people's houses. And whoever hosted the poker party provided the case of beer. But then that even became a bummer because some of the people start fighting over, you know, the card games. He'd be sore losers, so we stopped doing that. Although I can remember, I guess it must have been about the Christmas of 62. I was living out on the Lake Shore, in fact, probably about the last 3-4 years before I left Buffalo. That's where I live. I always liked the suburbs. That I had a New Year's Eve party, and it was gay women that I traveled with at the time, the lesbians I traveled with. And I was working private duty nursing, so I was making some good money, and I had a bottle of each person's booze that they wanted, you know, their favorite.
Uh-huh.
And we had a good time. It was about 8 of us. And those, you know, those kind of things. There weren't as many house parties. When there were house parties, they were usually after hours, at least of the people that I traveled with. I'm sure that they were there. But partying seemed to be the big thing, you know, work, eat, sleep, and party.
Mm-hmm. Was... Were there any raids at Pat's and Dugan's or the carousels in 53 or 54?
No, not that I can recall. The only thing that I can recall is when I was, as I said previously, about when Rockefeller came into office.
What year does he come into office?
God, I don't remember. I know he was in too long. Was it 60? Somewhere in
I
the
guess
early
I
60s.
Can check that easily.
Yeah, early 60s. And we weren't aware at the time that they had vice squad officers into the bars, observing people's behavior. But as much as we talk about oppression, as I think about this, I've said this many times, gay men have always gotten it sooner and faster than we have.
Is that right? Why
yeah.
do you say
because
that?
Because as I think about the vice squad officers, their complaints were the men had tight pants on, and their appearance and their carrying, in their reports, because the man who owned the 132 told us about the different things he went, when he had to go to these investigations, the things that were said. And the majority was pointed at the men. Even before that, though, I do remember men being harassed into situations. You know, a vice squad officer would come in and, because of loss of a better word, seduce a gay man and get him outside and say, you're under arrest. And that wasn't done to women.
Huh.
Another thing which I tell people, women have always been able to dance together in gay bars or non-gay bars.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. But that two men try to get up. And the only thing I can think of in thinking of today's terms is because of the macho image. You know.
So back there in those early 50s, you weren't involved in any kinds of raids or harassment from the police?
No, only the one I told you about when I went to Florida.
Right.
When I was sitting in a gay bar and they closed the doors and I asked
what,
why.
What year was that?
1960.
Oh, okay.
I decided I was going to relocate there, but we only stayed about 6 months. I didn't like it, and I came back. So it's a raid, and the officers were very polite, asked us for ID and everything, and they said, go now. And we got outside. They told us to step in the paddy wagon. It was about 30 people.
And then what happened?
I remember calling my maid at the time and asking her to get a bondsman. They had a list of bondsmen, and she called the bondsman, and what had ended up happening was they said that everybody had to get out on the same bondsman. So it's a well-known Southern carpetbagging deal, because it was on a Friday night, and they knew people weren't going to stay till the weekend. And I remember getting out, and I went to a lawyer. My civil rights were imposed upon, and he said, who do you think you're kidding? You know, he wouldn't even touch it, which nowadays somebody would. And it ended up, I mean, when I was getting ready to leave Florida, I called to find out what was happening, and they said, well, the case had been dismissed.
Oh,
it was
so
harassment.
So you all in the early 50s didn't even think about raids and weren't nervous about raids in a place like the carousel?
No, I never was.
No. Oh,
particularly the carousel, because it had been there so many years. It was a well-established bar.
When, and so it closes in the early 60s then, the carousel.
Yeah, right.
And it had been there for that long.
Yeah.
And was the carousel a street bar or was that a more...
No.
No, it was a... What kind of... What did it look like?
The carousel, if anybody fought there, they got barred.
They did,
oh,
huh?
Yes. You know, no real stupid drunken behavior was allowed. You know, if you were trouble. There were certain people whose reputations preceded them that when they came into the bar, they would be told to leave.
Is that right? Huh. And who ran the carousel? Was
it a non-gay woman?
It was a non-gay woman.
I can't give your name, I guess. But a non-gay woman. From what I understand, her father had owned the Hotel Carroll, which was down toward the foot of Main Street. I think it was on Ellicott Street. And then she went into the bar business. And she was well-respected by the gay people.
What made her open a gay bar?
I have no idea. Because, you know, that was open long before I ever thought about it.
Right. What did it look like as a bar? I mean,
a typical bar. You know, it was nothing to write home about. it was, I would say, probably comparatively small to what I see the bars opening up as now.
Small compared to
Betsy's. Yeah, they had their front room and their back room, like the bars, the taverns in Buffalo have. I say that because they don't call them taverns out on the West Coast.
And in the front room would be the bar.
And usually booths.
And in the back room would be
tables. And chairs.
Tables and chairs.
I know we did all our dancing in the back room.
Was dancing allowed?
Technically, no. If they thought there was a cop in the place, you want to come in and tell you to stop dancing. It was done.
But it wasn't really...
I think they had to have a dancing license. And, of course, being known as a gay bar certainly was discouraged if they thought that any law enforcement were present.
And it wasn't anything, let's say, was it as, look? Did it look like Betsy's inside?
Oh, God, no, no.
No, what did it look like?
Typical neighborhood tavern, you know, very small. It's been there for many, many years. You know, they didn't go out of their way as far as decor goes. No. In fact, my in trying to find out where the gay people go in Buffalo, all I can remember, there was a Villa Capri on Allen and Main. And so... the first night that Gene and I went out, I said, well, the best thing to do is go to the cab stand and ask the cab driver. So as we were driving down Main Street, she said, there's a Villa Capri. Well, it was, of course, a different Villa Capri. So I said, well, what do we got to lose? So we parked the car and went in. And it kind of reminded me when I first went in a bar before. You know, am I going into a gay bar or not? And what really surprised me is immediately I picked up something that would never even be thought of years ago, was that it was a Levi leather bar. A men's Levi leather bar. Well, you wouldn't even hear those terms years ago.
Is that right?
No, no, you would not hear them at all. In fact, you know, we were as guilty as stereotyping people, too. You know, when you talk about the butch and the femme, that you expected all gay men to be effeminate. Better known term today, sissies.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm glad to see Buffalo's moving along. But I was able to identify it. Now, 10 years ago, I could have walked in there and it wouldn't have meant anything to me.
Okay, so we're back in 53, 54, and then to get out of this relationship, which was difficult for you, you re-enlist in the Army, right? And then how long were you in the Army this time?
And then the next time I got out was in August 31st, 1955.
So you're in 2 more years?
Yeah, well, it was a total, with all the time, it was 5 years and 9 months, something like that.
And you were stationed in Virginia this time, the whole time?
No, I first went to Virginia, and... I ended up becoming a non-commissioned officer in charge of the WAC training, of the physical training branch of the WAC training center. I want to mind you, this is all lacking formal education. And then Fort Lee, Virginia, moved to Fort McClellan, Alabama, where the WAC training center is today. And I was, I'm part of the history of the WAC.
Is that right?
I was the last person from the physical training department in Fort Lee to move to Fort McClellan. And I helped open up the new, newest part there.
And what's a physical training center?
Phys Ed.
It's Phys Ed, huh?
Phys Ed.
And yet your training had been in as a licensed practical nurse the first...
Oh, I got that. No, that's another story.
Oh, how'd you get that?
I told you, I went, in Fort Sam Houston, Texas, I went to surgical technician procedure school. I hated the medics, and I was able to get out of it while I was in the service. And then one day I was sitting in the carousel, and I can't remember who the woman was. She was a licensed practical nurse, and she said... Buff, you know, you can get a license as a practical nurse because you went to school in the military. I said, oh, come on. I haven't been in it in years. It was during the recession. What was that, 57? No, no, it was before that. 55, something like that. No, it was even before that. Somewhere in the middle 50s. And so I thought about it. I thought, well, you know, what have I got to lose? So I wrote. She gave me the address who to write to, and I wrote, and I got this application back, and I filled it out, and I paid the fee, and then I went over to the Connecticut Street Armory on a certain date and took a test of almost 700 questions and passed them. So I became a licensed practical nurse.
When you were in the Army in Germany, were you a medic?
Well, I got out of the medics back in Seattle, Washington. So, but when I went overseas, I still had with the MOS. That was your job title. It was, they didn't change that as a medic. And I remember they put me into medics, and I was very unhappy about it. And I went to see one of the biggies one time and told him about it. In fact, I was in Bad Cannstatt, Stuttgart at that time. And so I got transferred to Germany to work in German youth activities. Well, and I was over there during when the occupation of Germany was released. And so they ended up closing the German Youth Activities Center, which was sponsored by the military forces. And so then I ended up becoming, summertime was coming around, so I became a lifeguard at the outdoor Heidelberg swimming pool, I was kind of bounced around because they didn't have any places for me.
Uh-huh.
And then just before coming back, I ended up working in supply until I came back to the States.
And then the second time in, you
went right back into physical training.
I see. Yeah. So it'd be phys ed. Yeah. And that's amazing without an education in that at all.
If you want to get to stereotypes, I was always a frustrated, wanted to be a gym teacher.
That's what you wanted to be.
Yeah.
Huh? How did you pick up what you knew about physical training? Just from watching people? Or?
Well, I was a water baby when I was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I loved swimming. And the black woman's birthday party that you went to the other night,
I knew
each other back at the Civic Stadium, mm-hmm. Which was when it first opened up many mm-hmm. years ago. And her and I had been friends, and I used to spend all my time there, she too. And I think she's in recreation or phys ed still to this day.
Right, I think so.
That's where we met, and then there was a Buffalo Turnbrine. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It used to be on High and Elegant. It was called the Buffalo Turners. They changed it to Turners during World War II because of the German affiliation instead of Turnbrine. I got very active there. It was a gymnastic organization, a family organization. They had a swimming pool. And I ended up getting my first job teaching swimming there at the age of 15.
So you had had some experience.
Right, and then the next that I worked at was probably when I was about 16, was at the YWCA. And then at Westminster Camp, as I told you, I was waterfront director and camp counselor. I was 16, 17. And the second time I got out of the service, second time around, this was through knowing the right person. I was very active with Joe Sweeney, who was a director of the Water Safety Department of Red Cross. Got to know him very well. And he got me into teaching swimming in the schools in the summertime, public schools. And once you got that job, it was yours the next year if you were here. You had priority on it. So in between times, whenever I was in Buffalo in the summertime, I always taught swimming in the public schools.
Huh. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So in the Army, the second time when you were in Virginia and then in Alabama, you were mainly in physical training, and that automatically put you in contact with a lot of lesbians.
You know, my lover that I got out of the service with, she was a basic training, and I didn't know that she had fallen in love with me at the time. But yeah, but when I was in the second time around, being a little wiser, I was very careful. I traveled with some gay people, but basically I was still a loner, and that goes way back to before I went in the service. I was pretty much a loner. I'd only let people get so close.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I was still carrying this love affair going on in Buffalo, and that's where my feelings were, so I didn't really get involved with anybody at that time.
Right.
When I finally made the break, just recalling it with Pauline, who I went with in Buffalo, was I had met Gordy in the service, and I came home at a Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
And to see her again, I was going to make my decision. And that was, I think, in 54. But I told her it was over. And I left and I went back. And then Gordy and I went together, and we were together until, off and on, until about 1965. 65, 66.
So and you met her in 54.
Yeah.
So.
It was almost 13 years, I remember that.
Huh.
I always said 8 years of happiness and 5 years of health.
Is that right? So you should have ended it 5 years earlier. Is that how you think about it?
Right.
Huh. So did she get out with you the same time?
Right.
And you both applied for discharge?
Yeah. Kept close contact with her. See, I look up in the regulations what you had to say and what you didn't. And I got a post office box. In a man's name, false name, so she could write to me, and I would call her long distance if I got called in for investigation to tell her what I had said so our stories would match.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some humor to that. I had decided I was going to become an officer, and I had applied for women's officer basic candidate school.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to go before a psychiatrist for a psychiatric evaluation. 3 weeks later, I was back before him telling him I was gay, and he got really angry. He said to me, he didn't believe that I was gay. He said to me, you don't care how you get out of the service, do you? He said, you don't give a damn how you get out of the service. They didn't believe her. They wanted to ship her to overseas. They're going to send her to Okinawa. Because one of the things that I made it very clear was that we were not to admit that we had any sexual contact. I can remember the investigator saying, what do you do with your girlfriend? What I do was always answer the questions with questions. Well, what am I supposed to do? And they'd keep trying and trying. And I said, well, neck and pet. What else is there? You know, what else? And I constantly would ask. I remember when they asked me if I'd ever committed sodomy, and I said, what's that?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, what kind of process did you go through to decide that you wanted to get out and you wanted to say that you were gay?
Well, the first step was that I had to tell this first sergeant why I wanted to see the commanding officer. Mm-hmm. And I remember standing before her and saying, "Sergeant Bennett has permission to see the commanding officer. I wish to inform you I have homosexual tendencies." And it just blew them all over, because at that time I was a very private person, mm-hmm. very, very careful. And they went through, and I knew what their routine was going to be. They went up and went through my locker to see if I had any letters they could use as evidence and pictures. And they constantly asked me who else in the WAC detachment was, was gay, and I did not cop out to anything. Well, what about so-and-so? I said, well, I don't ask them their personal business. And they work you over and over and over and ask you the same questions over and over. Mm-hmm. But it was almost like a script that I had written. I knew what I was going to say before I went in. Hmm. Because I knew what was going to occur.
Well, what made you come to such a decision to say this to them and go through this? Was it because it was the only way you knew you could get out?
Yeah, and also, again, like I told you, the fear of being caught in what's called a witch hunt. And they were starting them up quite a bit.
They were.
Periodically, they have witch hunts. You know? There's some humor to this. When I first went to Tucson, Arizona, as pastor of the church, somebody came to me and said, I really got to talk to you. And what the summation of what they had to say was that some of the people wouldn't go to the church because they heard that when I was in the Army that I served on the investigation staff and I was in a witch hunt for gay people. And I fell off my chair laughing. Mm-hmm. I said, me, who got out because I was gay? Huh. I recently, not too long ago, ran into the two women who I'd never met that started it and faced them and told them. I said, by the way, I hear that you heard, that's the way I put it, that I was on witch hunts when I was in service. I said, I won't tell you how I got out and why. Because of the fear, again, the oppression, the fear. Because it gets knocked down, drag out, dirty if they call the shots. But if I was calling the shots, I felt I could handle it better.
Why would it be worse if they called the shot? Because they would have evidence that you didn't know about on you.
Possibly, yeah. Usually they wouldn't call you unless they had something on you. But this way, I could tell them more or less what I wanted them to know and what I didn't want them to know.
Had you discussed this with any friends other than Gordy?
No.
So it's just the two of you who right. planned it together, mm-hmm. right? Was she at a different base at the time?
No, at the time, I had put in a transfer for the 1st Army Area, which is up, New York State, New Jersey, and so forth. And I was sent to Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. And she was still in Alabama, Fort mm-hmm. McCollum. And she had put in for a transfer, and she got Fort Devens, Massachusetts. I was hoping that she'd get the same base that I did. And so she was in Fort Devens, and I was in Fort Monmouth. And I got out a month before she did, actually more than a month because of the situation that occurred. They waited until discharged me on the last day of the month so they didn't have to pay me. I got no money whatsoever. And then I went to Massachusetts and got an apartment outside the base, of which she lived out there with me. And one day she came home and she said to me that they had her discharge ready for her. I said, I always told her, don't sign it until you talk to me, because you have to sign it and agree to it. And I said, what were you getting? And she said, undesirable. And, where I knew these rights, I don't know, but I always was a survivor, saying nothing venture, nothing gain. So I was scrubbing a farm, and I said, come with me. Got in the car, and we went back to the post and talked to the inspector general. And I told him that I had gotten out under general undesirable conditions. It was my statement that got her out, and vice versa. And I can't remember all the details, but military, they said, go home, write everything that you said, and put it in 3 copies, and bring it back. So I brought it back to him, so about a month later, her discharge came through, and she got a general undesirable conditions too, because we fought it. Mm-hmm. But if we had not fought it, she would have gotten undesirable. And I said to him, very simply, this doesn't make sense. It's because of our involvement with each other that our discharges have come about. And why do I get one and she gets the others? And they couldn't do anything to me, because I was already out.
Well, that was very hard to be speaking to commanding officers that you already had an involvement.
I've always been a nonconformist.
Right, you.
Gutsy, I guess you would say.
Right, that was gutsy. Well, did she, were you Gordy's first relationship, or had she been gay for a while?
She was gay when she went into the service.
She was. Was she the same age as you, or?
2 years older.
2 years older.
Yeah, until my present relationship, that's about what. The few women I was involved with were always just a couple years older than I am.
Huh. And did you all have similar interests and things
that? She was athletic-minded like I was. So I think back, she was much more of a homebody than I was. I wasn't ready to settle down. I had a lot of oats. So I used to go out a lot, and she would stay home. But even then, I was monogamous. I believe in monogamy to this day for myself.
Uh-huh.
And we had a monogamous relationship. I guess that's where you get into the butch and the femme type thing. You know? The femme stays home and the butch can go do whatever.
And so would you say that's what was going on in your relationship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh. And she, did she mind that or did she like it?
No, she didn't mind it.
She wanted.
Yeah. I think that our relationship, you know, you think back, the relationship would have been different. Where we had our problems was because we drank. We'd get into some knockdown drag-outs when we were drinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's say when you got out, well, let's go, you were in Massachusetts, and then as soon as she was out, you came to Buffalo?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Had she ever been to Buffalo before?
No.
So
no.
Where was she from?
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, my goodness. So she was a southerner who came.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how'd she like Buffalo?
Well, she liked it.
And did she go south after you all broke up?
No, we broke up in California.
I see.
And as far as I know, she's still out there.
Huh. And did she...
In fact, when I was going to California, I was going to get away from her. Because we broke up again. You know, this went through a period where you break up, go back, and go. And she begged me to take her with me. And I said, okay, as a friend, you know, and then ended up back into a relationship, out of a relationship, and that's what it was.
Hmm. And she, did she work when you were in Buffalo?
Yeah, she was a stenographer. She was always able to get good jobs, making good money.
So when you came out of the service, you settled here after Massachusetts, and you worked too. What kind?
I worked for the telephone company when I first got out.
As an operator? Or?
Yeah, uh-huh. A long-distance operator. And I didn't like it because it reminded me too much of the military.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're aware of what they used to be like. I understand it changed, but it was really, really disciplined. I remember the Buffalo snowstorms and having to take a bus to work. And I would wear a pair of slacks under my skirt because it was cold. And the telephone company was down by the city hall, and we went down there by that wind. And they told me I couldn't do that. I took them off as soon as I got to work. They told me I could not wear slacks to work. And you couldn't look to your left, you couldn't look to your right, you couldn't do anything. And I just got... I wasn't in a position where I wanted to be told what
uh-huh.
to do. I remember
uh-huh.
one time I was sick, and I called in sick, and they came around to the house to see if that's what was happening, if you're really sick. And after almost 6 years of being told when to get up and go to bed, I'd had it. So I kind of faltered around with jobs for quite a while, I didn't have my LPN license then, and lacking formal education, I couldn't get into, phys ed job as a full-time or recreation. And I remember one time when I was down in the New York State Employment Office, a woman had taken an interest in me. I was always going there looking for jobs, and she said, I think I've got just the job for you. And she had to make a phone call, and I can't remember the woman's name, but she called... Children wouldn't be heard or whatever. Like the SPCA for animals, but it was children. Watch over the care of children. The woman who was director of it. And the child care center on Delaware Avenue for emotionally disturbed children had been there for a couple of years, and they were talking about that they wanted to try a woman. There was one woman that worked a short time before me. Because they felt they had to have a mother figure around. And the requirements was a college degree. But she sent me out for an interview with Mr. Holland, who was a director, and I got hired. And I worked there for 2 years as a counselor to emotionally disturbed boys.
Yeah.
And I was very successful in the job. I had 20 kids that called me Ma. And I remember at the time, the starting salary was $3,000 a year, and the most you could get was $4,000. In a year and a half, and it was $100 a year increment. In a year and a half, I was making $4,000.
So you were doing well.
Yeah, doing well. And it was after that I got my nursing license.
Huh.
And what had happened, if you knew then what you know now, I would have been there longer. I had gotten, attacked or beat up by one of the bigger boys one day when I was a station wagon. It was in the winter, and I had gloves on and couldn't defend myself. And it affected a lot of trauma, a lot of emotion behind it. Instead of taking a leave of absence, I quit.
You know? Right. Take the time to get your head together about it. Right?
First day I worked there, I got a black eye by a six-year-old.
But you liked the work,
yeah,
huh?
It was challenging.
You liked being with young people.
Yes, it was challenging. I really liked it. I had 5 boys in my group, and they were like family. And I was proud to say that every one of my kids became Okay, they went to foster homes or back to their families.
Huh. And so you worked there for 2 years after the phone company, and then you got the job as an LPN, and you remained an LPN until you went to California?
Yeah, and I worked as an LVN in California. That's what I did most of the time. I found out that private duty was the most lucrative, so that's what I worked in most of the time.
And LVN is a licensed visiting nurse?
No, licensed vocational nurse.
A vocational?
Same thing, but different type.
I see.
Only Texas and Washington call LVNs. All other states, it's licensed practical.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So when you and Gordy's relationship, both of you always brought in money and, mm-hmm. and whatever, and at that time, would each of you pool your income or keep your own accounts?
Our money went into...
To one account.
Right.
Was that common at that time in the 50s?
I would think so. I don't know of anybody else that did it. I think it's almost uncommon now that you do it, but Gene and I have a combined income.
Uh-huh.
We put it together.
Just like that. And when you came out of the service the second time, you were with Gordy, did you go to the same bars or were they different bars from the time in 53?
No, the same bars.
Was Dugan still open?
No, I don't think it was. Carousel was still open.
Mm-hmm.
That was a period when most of the bars moved to Genesee. Bingo's was open. Yeah,
Bingo's was
they were still
by
open.
Now, huh?
They were still open. I have to think back about it. Yeah.
And what other bars did you go to at that period?
Just the ones that I had mentioned to you. They were all the bars that I had mentioned. Like, you know, Dugan's, Pat's, Bingo's.
And Gordy didn't go out as much as you, right?
No, but she would go out. You know, she would go out from time to time.
Was there one night a week where couples would go out together and one night a week when butchers would go out more? Or?
Not that I recall.
So it would just be what you all felt like at the time.
It's up to your individual choice.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And did she... What was it that you liked about the boys that she didn't like?
My favorite expression used to be to her, just because you don't like people, it doesn't mean that I don't have to like people. She didn't like a lot of people being around. She didn't like people as much as I did. She didn't feel they were necessary in her life. In fact, we used to argue about that quite a bit.
Huh.
I was notorious for bringing people home after the bars closed.
But that wouldn't be for a relationship. You would just bring them home to give them a place to go and stuff like that.
Something to eat or a place to stay. In fact, Gordy used to tell me that she knows the people that bring home stray animals, and I was always bringing home stray people.
Huh. And were these usually younger people?
Probably about the same age bracket I was at that time, because I was a lot younger.
Right, and they just didn't have a home, and you felt you were lucky to have a home?
Yeah. I just always felt sorry for people and trying to help them. That's why it's been so difficult for me to learn to say no, and I keep saying that I will learn to say no.
Poopy, I better let my daughter...
Maybe their family found out they were gay, and they didn't have any place to go, and probably didn't want to work, or whatever. On occasion, I was known for always giving somebody a place to stay. In fact, I was talking to a woman at... The Betsy, the first night I got in, an older woman, and she said she can remember what the house was out in the lake shore. We had a sun porch, we had it fixed up, we had a bar, and she said, and there was a couch on the end and there were two speakers over it. Well, that's where most people stayed in that particular house when we had room. And I was always known, I just like people. And I'd say, well, let's go to my house, and then we'd have something to eat, maybe sometimes party, sometimes eat and go to bed.
You must have had a nice house. It sounds like it was right on the lake.
That particular one was a hamburger on the lake. It was just one house and across the road and it was a hamburger on the lake, the private beach out there. And previous to that, we rented a house in Lakeview which had a big fireplace and a swimming pool. Back to the good old days when you could rent a house like that for $75 a month, which was considered a lot of money even then.
That's amazing.
Yeah, having a nice home had always been important to me. You know, not because I was into materialistic things, but to have a comfortable home, which still is important.
And in those days, did you do as much housework as Gordy did?
No.
She did all the housework, or the majority of it?
Majority. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But that was because she wanted to. She kind of spoiled me in that way, that... She used to say she enjoyed keeping house and doing the housework. In fact, when we first met, she didn't know how to clean house and didn't know how to cook.
Is that right?
I remember that one night she was going to cook supper, and I asked. I remember we had hamburger and mashed potatoes and a vegetable. And I remember walking out into the kitchen, and she was cooking a hamburger and hadn't peeled the potatoes yet.
And you knew about cooking.
Oh yeah.
But do you look back on that and think it's funny now that you didn't do any cooking and housework?
Well, I cooked. There's one thing I've always done.
You've always cooked, done.
But this is one time that she decided she wanted to cook. And then I realized I was very sympathetic about her not knowing how. I didn't get angry at her.
Uh-huh.
Because I realized that some people, their mothers or their family would never let them do it.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, she would like maybe dust and then sweep the floor because she didn't know the difference.
I see, because she'd never been trained. Well, how come? Was she from a more upper-class family or?
Probably middle class. Uh-huh. And she came from a very protective mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the roles of those days, the mother did everything. In those days, even today, a lot of women. Mothers just won't let them do it. Probably either it's because they're protective or they think that nobody else can do it right but them.
Right, right.
Where I came from a broken home and my brother worked, my mother worked, and I learned fast.
How to do it.
Which I resented then, but later on I didn't.
Uh-huh. And so she did most of the house cleaning and she did most of the cooking or
I would say that we probably shared the cooking because it took her a long time to learn.
Because
I've always done that. I probably shared the housework, if I remember correctly. See if I get my women straightened out here. Because we would do it together. Because I've always basically been that way.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And was that true of most of your friends?
Yeah. Those days, you know, roles were the thing. We didn't know anything about not having roles to a degree.